Seem strange to anybody that they planned this journey? I mean, they're volunteers, but they came and they were getting ready to leave, and they did a kind of a roll call, and there were no Levites. This is just, I'm speculating here, but is that kind of strange to anybody, or is there a good reason you think that no Levites volunteered, or they didn't think about making sure there were Levites there?
I'll speculate.
Okay.
Levites had no land. The tribe of Levi had no land. And where is all our wealth? Well, it's in real estate, right? That's where it's all at. Well, they had nothing to go home to.
That's true. And I didn't think about that.
And what did they have in Babylon? You bet they had land there. And they had homes. And they had real estate. And they had wealth. And they had 70 years of this being established. And they're asked to leave all that and go back to what? Oh, you might give us a town to live in.
Yeah.
We don't own anything.
Yeah.
And what are we going back to? I'm sure they heard word that, hey, this temple isn't anything like it was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That had to be disappointing. Like Marty said, this was a great disappointment. Because it was nothing what it was in its former glory.
Two things I want to jump on that you said. Number one, I didn't think about the land piece, but I thought about the comfort and the material blessings already where they were, please. We got to remember that during the 60 years, and I should have brought this up too because there's so much going on, what was happening back? Who was the king in between the first return and the second return? And who married a very prominent Hebrew lady who became queen?
Xerxes
and Esther. So, the Jewish people were always on the forefront of the leadership of the Persian Empire, even during the break. So there was communication back and forth, probably between the Jews that were there and what was going there. And because Ezra, Esther had these relationships with the kings, they, you know, were aware of what was going on. So, you know, obviously Ezra was wanted to go back, but you would think that a lot of other Levites might jump at the opportunity to go back, but human nature tells you that, man, there's a lot of work to be done. The temple's not done. Maybe I'll wait till they get the temple done and I'll go back. I'm speculating, and he
well,
is too.
It's asking us to go to Southside of Chicago.
Yeah,
to the church there.
That's. I don't think that's wrong to give that analogy. I think that's about right. I mean, you know, it was not going to be easy. And yes, ma'am.
I was assuming that just because Ezra's leaving, he wants to leave the Levites to make sure, you know, the people don't stray too far from the law, basically.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and you know, it's there's a lot of work to be done, not only physically but spiritually. And Ezra is certainly the leader. He can't do it all. He needs help. Another thing is, you know, this journey, even though they, we understand, even though they control a large empire, there's always rebellions and always, you know, highwaymen robbers going around. So we'll find out that the next return, there will be a military escort. Ezra didn't either ask for one or wasn't given one. So they were traveling as a caravan without any protection with some very valuable, you know.
Well, he was offered it, but he refused to
Yeah. Leave
because he said, God will provide.
I think he was, yeah.
And then when he had second thoughts, he's like, well, I'm too ashamed now to go ask
that,
for an escort because I've said God would take care of it.
Yeah, I think that was kind of a, his thinking was he was maybe a little too proud now to go back and ask. Yeah.
So to kind of lend a little bit more to what Danny was saying about the Levites being comfortable and going back, we know the people that were left around Jerusalem were kind of the remnant of poor people and things like that, and they would be relying on the people to take care of them. If you look at Nehemiah 13, his final reform, that's one of the things that he says is not right. They're not taking care of the Levites like they're supposed to. And he goes to the people and says, why is this so? Why aren't you bringing the tithes? And maybe they knew going into the attitude of the people saying, well, why are we going to go there? They're not going to take care of us.
Yeah, I said, imagine, you know, it wasn't like our communication today, but there wasn't any communication. People would go back and forth. There was probably, you know, so family members were, there was some communication going, so that's a good point. They probably didn't know the conditions you know, if they moved there besides the physical.
Well, we know that once they actually got there, they didn't get taken care of like they're supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they didn't. There are a lot of things.
I was just going to say also
that were negative.
They had skills, you know, as Levites that would have been passed down, you know, through their heritage of you know, learning and reading and understanding, and not to mention, I guess, that could have been useful in trades and in making a living there in Babylon. And we see a lot of, like we said, like you're saying, prominent Jews in, you know, leadership or, you know, prominent positions because of their understanding and their learning and their understanding of the law and stuff like that. So the Levites may have been, you know, part of that to a certain extent as well.
Yeah, that's true. And I think I was going to ask Marty this. You know, I wasn't able to figure out what the literacy rate was at this time, but my assumption is the reason the scribes had such power, like, because they were educated and they could read the law and they could copy the law. And this is before the printing press, so I mean, people that could copy the law were very valuable, and so were books. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why they had to wait until they could get enough Levites to come with them. So there was a little bit of a delay, and that might explain, you know, why you get about a day about leaving their homes, and then when they actually left the riverbank.
But part of it is they're bringing back some of the holy articles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember your, you know, Old Testament history, when the tabernacle was built and they began to establish that order of transporting the tabernacle and all the articles that went with it, there were designated Levites that were to carry and protect these very holy articles, these special things. That was the way it was supposed to be. God said, you're going to take these things, and that's why you see Ezra dispersing all these
right.
special articles to the Levites, because they're the ones that were obligated to carry it, because they were holy, and these specific Levites were to be holy. You know, they were set apart specifically for
yeah.
these articles.
Yeah, I mean, they were needed for a lot of reasons, not only for the spiritual reasons, but they're actually duties they had to do that they could only do. So to really, you know, get the people back into the right worship, they needed all those to come. So the letter that Ezra received from Artaxerxes authorizing his trip, we kind of go through that verse by verse here. I'll just tell you what I got for 13, who's going, and the authorization for it. 14 and 25 are concerning the law. 15 through 18, three sources of the offerings. 19 is what Daniel talked about, the temple articles being returned. And then 23:1, 23, and 24 really gives, I think, not only is he allowing them to go back and do this, but he's allowing the local treasury to be used. And if you look at what they're getting here, silver, wheat, wine, and oil, those are very valuable, even more so in their day. So, you know, Ezra was obviously very well respected and to be able to get this kind of treatment from the king. And of course, maybe more amazing was no temple officials will be taxed. So he was giving tax-free status to the officials. So there are a lot of benefits that the Jews were getting that seem almost amazing to me. But we know why it happened. And then 25, what else was Ezra given besides the authority and the money to do this stuff? I thought this was interesting. I'd forgotten about this.
What's the wisdom from God?
Yeah.
You know, and I think as we're reading through this and looking through this, God is laced throughout this entire letter. And I don't know if that's the best way to say that, but he's just, I love how Artaxerxes is like, according to the wisdom from God, to the house of God, all of this is devoted for the purpose of glorification of God. And I love that he recognizes that, which is, you know, wasn't always the most common thing. And, you know, trying to think where it was, verse 12, the law of God of heaven, perfect peace, according to the will of your God in verse 18, before the God of Jerusalem in verse 19. You know, so it's just, there's a purpose behind it that he recognizes. And he's, you know, and giving that, you know, giving acknowledgement where acknowledgement is due.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting is you think about when the northern kingdom was taken away to Syria, you hear nothing because God didn't promise anything. When Judah was taken away, instantly Daniel is heard of. He prophesies. We see that come through with the Persian Empire and you know, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. So God is all throughout this. God is in control and overseeing everything, and you can see God's providence benefits the Jewish people because it was part of his bigger plan.
So you even see our founding fathers taking this example and incorporating it in our own justice system. And so we have elected officials like the president, governors, even our House of Representatives and Senate. Yet when it comes to the judges and magistrates of our country, like the Supreme Court, they're by appointment. And so you see the example here that you have a high official in Ezra who is going to appoint these. This isn't an open election. And so I think what this does is it helps to protect the purity is not the right word. Somebody can help.
Integrity.
Yeah, the integrity, the assurity that justice is going to happen, because it's going to be based on the wisdom that God gives Ezra to choose these individuals to serve in these capacities.
Yeah.
And so it's going to maintain justice and righteousness in that land.
And there's going to be actually, you know, next lesson, I believe, we'll talk about a very important judicial matters they have to take care of, right, that are vital to keeping the law pure. So we'll definitely learn about that next time. But yeah, that's a good point too. And then if you turn over to the back page, I'd like to talk about, it says note here in 8:2-14, in every case but one, the family names are the same as the people who are listed for returning to Babylon 80 years earlier. I had not heard that. Has anybody noticed the connection between the names between the people that had come, I guess, 80 years before this one? I hadn't thought about that, but that's interesting. So once again, there's almost like a cycle of returnees that are kind of related. So I thought that was interesting. So I'm glad Grady pointed that out.
Can I just ask what
that is?
Yeah. That's the same names that were mentioned, like at the end of Second Kings, or is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So it's the same family line that came back, at least in the first return. And so we talked about number 12. Before people left the river, what was that this problem? If you look at 8, let's look at 8:21-23. So before they left, this is what Ezra wrote. Verse 21. Then I proclaimed a fast at here at the river of Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God and seek for him the right way for us and our little ones and all our possessions. For I was ashamed to request the king and this escort of soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy on the road because we had spoken to the king. The hand of our God is upon all those for good who seek him, but his power and wrath are against those who forsake him. So we fasted and entreated our God for this, and he answered our prayer. So like Danny said, they're looking back at before he left, and he kind of remembers how, you know, they really needed to pray for God's assistance to make this long journey and get there at all without any help. So It was just a good example of kind of reminds me of many journey from out of Egypt in a way, right? They're kind of going out of the Egyptians, and they're counting on God's providence to get them through to the promised land. Same thing here. It's almost like they're going back to the promised land again, and they're setting up with the right attitude to trust in God to get there, and not their own might.
Well, and the fact that they're doing this together, they know what they're about to do, and the fact that they are fasting and praying together for strength, not only from God, you know, from God, but to help each other and to be together in that, you know, I think that's a huge, and for the fact of humbling themselves and seeking God for the whole entire group.
Yeah, and I think that's important that you know, they realize that they're going back for maybe even a greater purpose than building. It's really to restore the law among the people and restore the purity of the law, because you know, it's always a problem when you're in a settled land with you know, either opposition to what you're doing or influence from people you've married or people you associate with. To keep the religion pure, so you know, that's as applicable today as it was back then. So I think, you know, it's interesting to see God's providence in the Old Testament and see how Christ got to be the Savior of the world, but it's also good to look at the examples of it, that those followers went through that we can often struggle with as well.
So, question: would it have been a lack of faith on his part if he had accepted the king's escort?
Yeah, you know, I think would it have been wrong? No, but I think it would have. At this point, maybe you can say that. Does anybody else have a different idea? You know, Nehemiah. We'll look at Nehemiah, but he got an escort. Would it have been bad if Ezra went back to the king and said, well, we have faith in God to get us there, but just to be safe, would you mind providing 5,000 troops to escort us down there? I don't know. I guess he could have done that, but I think he knew.
I feel like if he had initially accepted, it would be different.
Yeah.
But like if he had gone back and said, nah, I'm not feeling quite safe enough.
Yeah, he would. This is my speculation, but my guess is that, well, we know this for Daniel. We know what's the reason why Daniel was so respected by the king, at least initially, or Nebuchadnezzar initially.
His wisdom,
and his refusal to change his ways, to, you know, to eat the food of the king and the drink of the king. He showed character by sticking to what he believed. And, you know, turned away maybe some of the pleasures he could have done to stay true to his God. And, you know, that is a good example of what we can do. You know, they believed in a lot of gods back then. I think back then maybe they had more belief in God or gods than our people do today, you know, with you know, atheism and all that. But I think that when a king or someone sees someone they respect and they see how they follow their God, that's something that can be, you know, make them respect that God too.
Okay, so that might lead into the next question. Why such the concern of doing the counting out all the gold and all the things that they were taking with them? They took account of it. They made a record of everything. Everything's laid out carefully. Yeah. Everything is properly distributed. So much so that we're even mentioned who had what. And yet when they get there, all the accounting is redone. Everybody has to present what they've taken. So what's the lesson there?
Well, I think that's, I hadn't thought about that, but
the more the faster off.
So I have a side note that says, according to Babylonian practice, almost every transaction, including sales and marriages, had to be recorded in writing. Ezra may have had to send back to Artaxerxes a signed certificate of the delivery of the treasures.
Okay. That could be true. Yeah. I'm going to see I've got a study Bible that has some stuff. I'm going to see if it has anything like that here.
I
Well, so here's something I thought about. I may be wrong on this. So, you know, we often will say, well, I'm just going to trust in God. And that what we do is sit back. We really don't do anything.
Yeah.
We really don't do anything. We just sit back and we just hope it's just going to work out. And yet, what do you see the wisdom in Ezra? He trusts in God, and yet he still exercises a responsibility to take an account. Because what's that gonna do to everybody that's there? They're gonna be held accountable. They're gonna be because they're responsible for ensuring the safe delivery of this wealth. Because how many times things are lost in shipment?
Yeah,
it is. Somebody has stolen it. You know?
Well,
they put it in 5-figure discount in their pocket. It's always an inside job. And yet you see here a careful accounting and expected responsibility for those in which this care was given. And yet they take this trip that wasn't an easy trip. There was perils along the way. And yet they arrive safely and accounting is done. Everything makes it. Not one thing is missing. Not one penny is missing from this. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Before Marissa read what you had in there, my thinking was exactly that. You know, there's a reason, I guess you ladies may or may not know this, but there's a reason that when the men count the collection, they don't do it alone. Right? Mm-hmm. Not that I wouldn't trust James to count the collection alone if I gave him $15,000 to count. But we just don't. And why?
It removes
temptation. Exactly. And going back to your other statement, God will provide, right? He says He will provide. So if we just, if we just live and just, God will provide, God will provide. I'm not going to go to work because God will provide, We have to use our common sense, right? I think God gives us common sense for that reason. Just about here, so I'm going to go political on you for a second. I think as a nation we're losing our common sense, but I think God has given most people common sense. So that I think you're right on that.
So in the case of Ezra, you have the wisdom of God given him. He's exercising the wisdom God has given. God is giving us wisdom through our own maturity in our faith. As we come to understand, that gets exercised in the choices I make. That's the wisdom God gives us to make good decisions, good judgments as we move forward. And here we have an example of a man doing just that.
Okay. We also have in verse 21, thereby the Hobbit now I proclaim to fast, so that we might humble ourselves before our God and ask Him for a safe journey. So they're fasting and praying. So. It's not that they just trust and then they don't ask God for help or they don't, humble themselves before God.
Right. We have to actually do something. It's action, not just, belief, right? So that's true. Yeah.
They're all taking ownership of this. They're all in this together by the fact that, they start by fasting and praying and then, there's specificity. God is a God of details. And I think we see that throughout Ezra and Nehemiah. He's a God of details for a purpose. And so they're in this together. And Ezra's putting ownership and responsibility on each of these people to say, this is part of yours. You have ownership in this.
Right. And as soon as, and the last question, this bleeds into that. The last question is, after they take account that everything was delivered to the temple, what did the people do? Led by Ezra.
Worship?
Yeah, offer sin and burnt offerings, right? So, they showed their repentance and their thankfulness to God with action. And in the way he authorized it. So, certainly, a successful journey and there's more work to be done, but at least they've gotten the articles back in the... And how long had it been since the articles were in the former temple? I'm asking a question, but I'm not exactly sure.
Are we at like 100 years at this point?
Yeah, I'm going to say 586 BC was the destruction of Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's when they took it.
And we're about 4 or right around 5.
I thought 36 when the first
rebel. So yeah, 100 years is about right.
Yeah.
So how long it's been. So, you know, 100 years, when you read it in the Bible, it doesn't seem like very long, but what was happening 100 years ago? Let's see.
World War I.
Yeah. World War I. So a long time ago. But, you know, sometimes God's promises don't happen right away, and that's, you know, we see that throughout the Bible, but His promises will always be fulfilled in His time. So, Sunday we will do lesson 7, and James will lead us in that. I think we'll talk about the problem of intermarriage and the judicial stuff. And, actually some pretty hard decisions to be made on that. And I guess we can maybe draw a parallel today, but I'm sure James will have something good in store for us. So, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming, and we appreciate your comments.